All right.
Let's get through the pound net issue, and then we'll call.
All right. May I take a moment to comment on these proceedings that we've seen today, just for a second?
Do you have some perspective, Dad?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't, one case I heard, I don't think the word is completely out that the three-peat rule no longer exists, and that in August of 2013, with the help of law enforcement, fisheries management, and all the advisory committees weighing in on how sanctions should be handled, there was a new day here at the commission. And so I just felt today, listening even to one of the cases, that it was thought that this three-peat rule is still in existence, and it's not. And then the other part of my comment is that we've had mandatory reporting for 22 years, and we can only make it better with your help, case by case, and hope that the word spreads on how serious mandatory reporting is. And, you know, I think that today is really, you know, emblematic of the importance of both the sanction changes that the commission has now and how seriously the commission takes mandatory reporting. So staff, thanks you for that. Today there's a case involving a protest. Few individuals are protesting an application for the commission to license a pound net at a new location in accordance with Regulation 25 pertaining to pound net siting and a public interest review. And here's the public notice. The individual's Edward Mark Bender of Cheriton, Virginia. He submitted to the commission the following application for three sites, and it is the first site, a pound at approximately 1,700 feet southwest of Tankards Beach, and the coordinates are there for you to look at, that is protested. The other two sites were not protested. There was a little disjointed action here involved in our process in that Mr. Edward Mark Bender applied for those three locations, advertised on August 26th, but the notification to staff was after that advertisement. Although staff would contend that once the applicant publishes in the newspaper, that starts the 30 days that is necessary for this notification process, when staff talked to those who had protests, the indication was if they needed some extra time, that was fine as well. So consequently, with that late notice to staff of when exactly this was posted, we had to put that on the website a little bit later than usual. We try and coordinate those dates exactly. In this case, it did not happen. It appears to staff that that did not deter the process at all, and that the applicant and those who protested were able to meet all the deadlines. These are the two nets that were approved. So again, there are three that were applied for, two were approved. Regulation 25 indicates that if there is not a protest, then those can be cited. Regulation 25 also indicates if there is a protest, then as soon as possible after the 30 days of advertisement, this will appear before you at the commission. Here's just an indication on the eastern shore of all the pound net licenses. It is fairly substantial. We probably have 120 active licenses, and about half, at least, maybe more, on the eastern shore. Pound nets are a historic fishery, going back to 1900 or so, 1902. And at one time, yes, there were over 2,000 pound nets in the bay right around World War II. By the 1980s, it was down into the 300 to 400. And the reason that pound nets are a premium, there's a cap of 161 licenses for pound nets. That started in 1994. That was the commission providing a way so that town net fishermen could keep gray trout or weak fish and not have to shut down their pound nets. That's what it all stems from. These are the two nets that were approved, just to let you know. They're about 5 miles below Cape Charles. Here's the pound net that's protested, shown in red, and here's Smith Beach up here. Tankards Beach is right below. Again, another look at the extension of the pound net that is protested. There are three nets adjacent to the proposed site. They are held, the licenses are held by Mr. Keith Like, one here and two here. The proposal does provide the legal amount of spacing of at least 900 feet. So in the one case, there's 1,001 feet between the proposal and one of Mr. Like's nets. And in the other case, there's about almost 2,300 feet in between the southerly, more southerly located net of Mr. Like. Staff received three protest letters. The concerns, one from the Hannas, their concern for children's safety, their children, while swimming in the area. The comment that's also in your packet indicated that they principally are there to enjoy the waters. Also, there are comments from Mr. Donald Clark and Ms. Price Clark, and they haven't yet said what their objection is. Ms. Price Clark has been in touch with staff going back at least 3.5 weeks when this started, and contacted Mr. Badger, who contacted me. I contacted Ms. Clark. She wanted to find out information. The same for Ms. Mears. She also wanted to know the history of the benders applying for pound nets there. All of that was researched by Dr. Barth of our MIS division, and he provided all that information to Ms. Clark and Ms. Mears. So 11 years ago, there was a need to have this public siting review regulation. This all started back when Mr. Ernest George had a pound net located next to the Windmill Point, I'll say condominium association, and they had a lot of upsetment about Mr. George's net. The commission found at that time that Mr. George had standing. He had that location. It was a grandfathered location. Mr. George subsequently moved his location, but at the same time, it all kicked off this public interest review process back in 2004. And at the time, it seemed convenient to use these six criteria, which you're going to see in a different format in a second, but they're really adopted from Article 1 of the Constitution, and they're all about the public trust. And the commission, each time it has looked at a protested site, had to decide whether there are other reasonable and permissible use of the state waters that the proposal would impact. Does it impact the marine and fishery resource of the Commonwealth, the tidal wetlands, adjacent or nearby properties, the water quality, and submerged aquatic vegetation? Staff can tell you that it does not impact submerged aquatic vegetation. That's not a situation where this location is. Staff can tell you also that the proposed site does have proximity, about 3/4 of a mile is what we estimated, from one of the opposing residences. So there is sort of a nearness there. And here you see up here, the distance is about 9 miles is what we calculated between the two nets that were approved and the one that is being, under consideration today for the commission. So we come back to this public trust, and staff is usually not able to really give very objective information, because when you look at these, it's pretty difficult, other than the SAV, to tell the commission that's going to impact water quality. However, in this case, there are those who, instead of coming to the commission and inundating the commission with aesthetic reasons why they didn't want the pound net, which has happened in the past, there haven't been that many applications that the commission has turned down. In this case, you do have a letter from a homeowner who indicates that it does impact their enjoyment of the waters in that location. The other part of this is, how about the adjacent or nearby properties? What is their disposition? I'm sure we're going to hear from Ms. Clark and maybe some others about that factor. So you'll want to have that information in front of you as well. There are really about four things that staff can tell you in providing a recommendation for denial of the proposed pound net. Staff talked to Captain Ballard on the Eastern Shore and asked Captain Ballard, wasn't there a proposal in this same area previously in the last several years? And Captain Ballard said yes. And staff asked Captain Ballard, well, what happened? And the response was that that individual decided to move to a different location rather than set up animosity among those who were nearby in that area. So that's one factor. The second factor is there's never been a pound net at that site. So a lot of places you could have a pound net. At that site, there's no grandfathering of any historic type of net, which the commission has looked at before when they found out, yes, a generation ago or two generations ago, there was a pound net. That's not the case here. The third situation is, of course, the public comments. And, you know, staff feels that there's some direct public comments that should really be taken into account. And the fourth consideration is you apply for three nets. I know, Mr. Bender, you apply for three nets and two are approved. And we're talking, if you didn't notice, this process started in January of 2015. Here we are, October 27th. So there was a great amount of time between getting this to the commission. Two nets are approved. Any nets that are approved will now have to be set and fished before December 31st, 2016. So essentially a year, because I don't imagine that there'll be any setting of them this year at this late date, but it's possible. The last thing staff is interested in here is the process that we have to work with, and that's the two-year process. And staff has talked to the commissioner on a couple of occasions. This two-year situation has turned out, in some cases, in staff's opinion, to be bet hedging. It's a situation where if you have a license, you don't have to set your pound net or your stake gill net. You can go 2 years and everyone will know that that's your site. And that is contrary to the way that Chapter 20, Regulation 20, was established a long time ago, where you fish and set the same year. If you don't do so, you lose that license. The two-year rule came about first with sea turtles. National Marine Fisheries Service was working on the Eastern Shore doing an experiment to help the turtles. And so there was sort of a delay in the process of the 1 year. Later on, we had Hurricane Isabel, Tropical Storm Ernesto, and the regulation has remained the same. And staff thinks there must be better ways to look at problem situations where someone really does need to have more than 1 year, but probably not this way. And so in talking to the commissioner, it's agreed that staff will start this conversation with the Fishery Management Advisory Committee. It's been a confusing situation. Captain Ballard indicated that it's confusing and that he would very much like to see this go back to a 1 year. There's 161 licenses up until about 4 years ago. Not everyone partook of all those licenses. So again, staff's concerned with the equity involved here because there may be someone who wishes to get a license and set it, and yet it might be in the hands of someone who just is holding that license as a buffer. So thank you for that, and here's a staff recommendation. Denial of the proposed pound net at a new location 1,700 feet southwest of Tankards Beach. And Mr. Bender is here, but this is a public hearing.
Any questions from the commission? Mr. Bender, do you want to come forward and address the commission on this matter?
Well, I defer and hear what these people got to say.
You're the applicant. I'd rather hear what you have to say, and I'll give you a chance to rebut after they have something to say.
My name's Edward Mark Bender. I'm a pine nutter from the Eastern Shore. I'll try to be brief. I'm inside the pine line area, the legal distance from everybody, north, south, east, and west. There's no submerged grass. The truthful reason why I'm trying to get these traps is I'm also a conch potter. And the commission took the right away from me to be able to dredge horseshoe crabs due to criteria, whatever. I didn't meet the criteria. I've been dredging horseshoe crabs all my life, but I can't do it anymore. So I am eligible to catch horseshoe crabs by the method of pine netting. Horseshoe crab costs $4.25 a piece. I use approximately 150 of them every time I leave the dock. What I want to do is catch my own horseshoe crabs, commercially freeze them, and then use them in the fall and the winter, possibly the spring. So that's why I'm trying to get these traps close to the beach. Anybody knows anything about pine netting is I've got other traps, but they're in 35, 40 feet of water. They don't catch horseshoe crabs, very few that they catch, because we don't fish close to the bottom. In other words, it's hard to hold the bottom in 35 feet of water, so it's easier to catch crabs in 6-7 foot of water than it is 35 feet of water. So that's why I applied for the two traps that were, you know, and it's a shark season. Mr. O'Reilly could probably tell you that pine net horseshoe crabbing usually is over with June. Depends on the water temperature. You know, it just doesn't start maybe till sometime in April, and it's over with in June. These traps that I applied for, once the horseshoe crabbing's over with, they won't be there. They're very small traps. The pine head itself is probably 25 foot square and less than 10 feet deep. Approximate number of poles it takes to put one of these in is probably 50 poles. 50% of those poles will be 700 feet off the beach. You'll have a couple double sets of poles going in towards the beach. I float my leaders. It won't be many poles in there. I've been swimming around pine nets all my life. I've never heard of anybody becoming entangled in one. Personally, I just seen had the pine nets there straining out the sharks, the sand skate, stingrays, and all that. They go in the trap in. They make the beach a little bit safer, as far as I'm concerned. They catch all the floating debris, nails, boards, whatever. So, you know, I don't see the problem as far as, you know, the bathing part of it. I mean, some people don't like nothing in front of their house. If houses and pine nets didn't go together, if you look at that map that you showed a while ago, there wouldn't be any pine nets on the Eastern Shore. So I guess that's all I got to say. I really do need the pine net. And like I said, it'll probably only be fished till sometime in April, till whenever the horseshoe crab quota is caught up. That's the reason I want the traps, and I guess that's about all I got to say. You got any questions?
Any questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Bender.
Thank you.
It's a public hearing. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to be heard in favor of this application? Anybody who wishes to testify against the application, come on forward, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners.
I need a permit.
Thank you for the opportunity to address you. My name is Sela Burge. I'm with the firm of Turner & Turner, and I'm representing today Richard and Kimberly Hanna. That's the couple that you have the letter from. I am here to speak in opposition to this license for the pound net applied for by Mr. Bender, reiterating that the Hannas are not directly opposed to pound nets in general terms as a method of fishery, but this location is adjacent to their property. You could see that there. And it is very close to the area where the Hannas children, Grace, who's 6 years old, Emerson, who's 8 years old, they do play and they swim in the waters right there at the end of their property on that beach. As the Hannas had stated to you in their earlier written objection, they certainly are concerned with logical problems that may be associated with the location of a pound net here. Among those kind of concerns that I want to reiterate for you today are possibly some navigation issues as boats come into that area, if you're familiar, and they go up along there towards Smith Beach, which is a beautiful area for people on the shore where we live to go up and down that area and go in and near to the beach. It is very shallow along there. The possibility of increased predators, although Mr. Bender is not as concerned as some folks are concerned about sharks and rays and other things in the water where their children are, or possibly could be where their children are there and swimming. Other possible currents and tide conditions that affect all of us on a day-to-day basis, but those could affect the children's also playing there, rafting and swimming, and could possibly have them to be entangled or to move from an area where they intend to be swimming into an area where they shouldn't be or where they may wind up. Under the public trust doctrine that your staff has already well laid out for you, there are other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters that need to be considered in this application, along with the effects of the use of state waters and how that use affects adjacent properties. The Hannas would respectfully ask for you to consider this effect, the limitations that may be placed on them, their family, and their family's activities recreationally and others, safety, particularly safety issues, again, related to their family and friends and others who may be enjoying their property and their beach there, and just to look in general at some of those uses, both recreational of the beach waters and the near shore areas. Also, would you consider there are alternative placements of pound nets, and you could see that very clearly as there are dozens and dozens of pound nets along the eastern shore. And would you also consider the general effect of the location that a pound net might have just on their property? And you've heard a lot of those other issues about their property is right there. It does affect them in that those nets would be used from the beach side potentially to get on there and fool with them and some of the other debris and things like that may be caught in the pound net, as Mr. Bender had mentioned, as sort of its own, if you will, watery trash can potentially. So they are concerned about just the effect that's going to have on their overall life there. I want to ask you to deny this particular application. Thank you for your consideration of it here today.
Thank you. Questions?
Can we put the map up there and let her show us where this property is?
That would be great if you would.
Let's see about my challenge today. Maybe it's. Nope. Okay. Let's try around here. Mr. Z drawn it. It looks like it disappeared. Let's see. We all saw it.
Yeah.
There we go.
There we go.
Apple is the mile of what we estimated.
From the home.
Could you just point to where it is? I see the house, but does that go all the way down or what?
Seal, would you come back up to the microphone here?
So it's right here, right?
Commission members, Don Clark.
Yeah, not on the roadway.
It's right here. The house is right here. We moved the house from down here and located it here. So that's an error, okay? It's not 3/4. It's right there.
Okay.
And the house that you're representing is like right in here.
Let's get this back under control, if you would, please. Ms. Birch, is there anything else that you have that?
No, sir.
Okay. Any questions, Ms. Birch? Thank you. Next to testify.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Plumley. It's a privilege to be here. I represent the Clarks. They are both here to testify. I'm not sure it's necessary. They own the two lots right on either side of the proposed site for the pound net, and they oppose this application. We see that EP32 pound net is just about 1,000 feet to the north, and EP36 is not too much farther to the south. As indicated in the staff report, this is not a location where pound net has been previously located, so there's not an established right there. If approved, navigation by the paddle boarders and other recreators in that area, I think, are going to be overly restricted with the pound nets. My clients swim and paddleboard and frequent that beach. They use the bay for their laps, and they would worry over the concern of the location of this pound net. Price has told me that she worries about the predatory species being drawn in to the catch there. It's purported, I've not checked this out, but it's purported that it would hamper navigation up into Smith's Beach, in and out of there, and there's been a lot of movement of the sandbar in that location from storms recently. I think we're aware of that. My clients wouldn't be the only recreational users impacted. You've heard from others, but you probably aren't aware that there is a nonprofit called Upstream Alliance, which kayaks in that area. They provide environmental education to youths in that area, and they kayak. They're going to be impacted. In 2010, and Mr. O'Reilly pointed this out, Mr. Keith Like proposed to put a pound net in that exact location. She spoke to him, explained her position on it. He decided not to do that for the reasons that Mr. O'Reilly pointed out, didn't want to cause a rift with the landowners. Ms. Clark attempted to contact Mr. Bender but was not successful in doing that previously. And that's why they didn't just send a letter in objecting. They wanted to try to contact and speak to the waterman and see what his issues were. And they also asked for information from this agency to determine what other permits he may have in that area. If approved, Mr. Bender would be receiving his 11th pound net approval from this commission. In fact, I served on the commission when we approved a couple of them. It's my recollection at that time his father was asked to surrender a gill net license, and he received two pound net licenses at that hearing. There were no public, there was no public protest at that hearing. No one appeared and protested. There may have been some comments sent in, but nobody appeared and protested at that hearing. And I point out that the weight of the equities do fall on towards denial here under the statute. My clients aren't insensitive to the economic needs of Mr. Bender and what he's trying to do for a living. They've thoughtfully researched this issue. They've looked at it carefully. But a denial is not necessarily going to mean a hardship on the waterman in this instance. 1205 permits you to weigh your decision in this way, and the public trust doctrine requires you to weigh it in that way. Here we do have their use and enjoyment of their property in front of the water, but also their use of the water. They're paddleboarding, they're swimming, and that is an alternate use. You have the navigation concerns, and clearly you have the nearby residents pointing out that they're protesting it. So It's something you can do. I'm not you. It's up to you. I just ask you to consider those things and ask you to deny this particular application for this gentleman. Thank you very much.
Any questions, Mr. Plumley? Thank you, sir. Mr. Clark, do you want to be next or somebody else? Okay. Please state your name for the record.
Price Clark.
Thank you.
I need to do that?
No.
Okay. I do like looking at pound nets. I look at the one off Tankards Beach all the time, and I do appreciate Mr. Bender's situation and need to have a pound net. I just don't want it in this location. This Bayfront property has been in our family since the 1960s. There are two parcels. I moved a house to one parcel. That's where I'm living. The other parcel, I hope children or grandchildren will live there. So I've got two ways to get to the beach. It's 500 feet on the beach. And this proposed pound net would be like right between these two access points. Now, I like to swim. We didn't put in a pool because I'm doing laps in the bay. And I don't swim west. I swim laterally. And I wouldn't be able to swim in front of my property if the net is there. I also, we have a motorboat. I'm not good with motors, so I'm better with a kayak and a rowboat and especially a paddleboard. And if I have to go out 1,200 feet, I might end up across the bay. I stay close to the bay, especially when it's rough and windy out. And one other thing I was going to say is these nets this summer in the one at Tankards Beach, and I wasn't there to call right away, but a bottlenose dolphin was hung up in the net. Anyway, and we had friends staying there, and they came back and told me. And when we went over to it with the paddleboard, and a big chunk was taken out of the bottlenose dolphin. So I guess that's why I think, well, it draws sharks. Anyway, I hope you will be able to find another location for Mr. Bender. Thank you.
Any questions? Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Please come forward.
Now, which one would you like?
The one that shows existing.
Okay, that's probably at the beginning.
To the north and the south.
That's probably at the beginning or so. So you have all those, and then you have Mr. Likes come in here.
And there's one that showed just the two existing and the.
Right,
that's it.
There we go. So Mr. Likes' nets are here, here, and here, and this is the proposal. Okay?
Great.
Please
state. I'm Mariah Mears Pollard, and don't like to speak in front of people. But I wanted to say I oppose this application, and while I don't want to deny Mr. Bender his livelihood, certainly not, I'm the mother of three young children, and I'll show you on here.
But I have three young children, and we all enjoy the water, as my sister said, as well. Mr. Tankard has a pound net on his property, or right near his property. My property line starts right about here, just south of his. So, and then my property ends about right here. So I would be hemmed in, not only to the north, but also to the south, with pound nets. And, well, I appreciate the livelihood that Mr. Bender has. The idea of being constrained by those pound nets, both north and south, with young children and their friends, to me, that, you know, as a mother, I'm looking out for my kids' interests. So my concern is their safety. And I hope that you will consider an alternative place for Mr. Bender and that you deny his application for this particular place at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Mr. Bender, would you like 5 minutes here to rebut?
I'm going to ask Rob a question. Rob, when you were talking, make these applications, did somebody tell me, you or Joe, that the only people that had to be notified were within 500 feet of the insular park? I don't know where 500 feet is on there.
whose property line is where. Yeah.
I think the individuals that sent in the letters all qualify.
They're all within the 500
feet. Right. The three individuals sent in the letters. And you're right, this does stem back to January, so that was when a deputy was here. And, you know, currently, I think the commission has to look at this situation. The two nets are already allowed. It's this third net, and after you're finished, I need to remind the commission of some other avenues, too.
Right. Well, what I guess I really want to point out is this net is above Cape Charles a substantial amount of way. I've got a trailer, a boat, run up there and fish it and whatever. I don't really want to go up there. But if you look at that map of all the pine nets from the high-level bridge on Fisherman's Island, every 900 foot along that beach, there's a pine net. All the way to Guy's Point, all the way almost to Plantation Creek. Once you reach Plantation Creek, there's a series of bars over there where you can't even get, put a pine net in there, I mean, and reach the beach. I want to try to catch horseshoe crab. The closest place I could put that third net, I mean, above Cape, you got Cape Charles Beach, which you can't get there. And then you got the Point at Cherish thing. And then there's a big bar that runs outside of that. So you can't, when the bar comes back, it's almost up to Mr. Tankard's beach there. And that was, I can't get above where that is because then it was an age hindrance navigation going into Smith's Beach. I believe Al Heath, God bless his soul, he's dead now, but he tried to put a trap there and y'all denied it because it was a hindrance of the navigation to get into Smith's Beach. But far as hindrance to navigation along that beach where those traps are, that trap won't be 1,250 feet long. The field office in Exmoor, they want you to apply for the whole 1,250 feet. Even if you're not going to go out 1,250 feet, they let you drive your trap where you want to within that 1,250 feet. It doesn't have to be 1,250 feet. It could be 300 feet. It could be 500 feet. But wherever you find a slough to put your trap in, once we drive the trap, then we take the numbers and give it back to the VMRC, and that's where the trap has to be from then on out. But the original application, all applications are written now, are 1,250 feet long. And that trap won't be 1,250 feet long. It'll probably only be like 600 feet. It won't stick off no further than the ones that are already there. So far as a hindrance to getting into Smith's Beach, I don't see any. If you got to go, if you can go around one, you can go around that one. So I guess that's closest place I could find to put it.
So. Okay. Hold on, Mr. Bender. I think there's some questions here. Mr. Cedron.
Does it touch the land?
It goes to the low water mark. It doesn't go on their property. No. In other words, I can't drive any poles, put any net, anything on anybody's property. And I don't really go to the low water mark. We always leave 15, 20 feet, whatever, you know. So I ran into that problem with the fish and wildlife on Fisherman's Island. We yelled and hollered and whatever, so I always leave a little buffer in there, so there's no question.
How do you build that net? Do you build it, I mean, do you get boats and put them in there? How do you do that?
Well, they used to drive poles every 10, 12 feet right off the beach, you know, and you zigzag your net in between the poles. We've gone away from that because the poles tear your net up, so the less poles you got, the less repair work you have to do to your net. So we put a crab pot cork on the top of the net and float the top of the net just like you would float a gill net, the top line of a gill net. There's a series of poles about every 100 feet drove side by side just wide enough to get a boat through to run your leader out to where your pind is. The pind is approximately going to be 25-foot square. It has a funnel inside of the pind, and you have a heart-shaped, what we call the bay. Some of them call it the heart. The leader runs to that heart. The fish get funneled into a small funnel, and they go inside that trap. They stay inside of that trap until I take them out. And the way we take them out is you lower the top line down to the pine net. You get inside, web all the fish to one side of the pine net, bail them in your boat, reset the trap, and away you go.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Bender.
Thank you.
Chief?
Thank you, Commissioner.
Wrap this up.
So following the public hearing, the commission may issue the pound net license for the new location, which is the protested location, deny the license, or issue a license for a modified location. And I think that part is important. Most of the testimony you've heard, everyone pretty much said they understand that Mr. Bender has to make a living. And the other part here is staff has checked. All licenses are taken, all 161, for 2015. One of them is this proposed site, so that it would be at least one past event that has occurred with the commission is to allow Mr. Bender to come back with a new site. So that has happened in the past with other applications. It would still have to undergo the public interest review.
It's a good observation, Chief. Thank you. Well, the public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. For the testimony, you've heard the staff recommendation. What's the commission's will? Mr. Zedrin.
I kind of look at this the same issue that we had in Lynn Haven Inlet is where the people wanted to put the aquaculture, you know, the oysters, and they had all these pipes, PVC pipes out there. And I remember one photograph that you look out the person's house, and it's like right there. It's got all these pipes and everything, and it really destroys the whole purpose for having a waterfront house. Being as this is net really dissects the Clark's property, I think it's an added problem there because they can't even go in front of their own property back and forth. And I think that would definitely hinder the value of that property. And then you got to look at it, and then it restricts your usage between the two nets and that type of thing. And I think what we looked at in Virginia Beach is says that we said that we're going to have to start looking at this now, is that we just can't lease the oyster grounds right up to somebody's property because it's more than just, an aesthetic thing. I mean, you got traps there, you got the pipes and everything like that. And I think that my feeling is to concur with the staff recommendation for all those reasons.
Ms. Haney.
Question for staff, Rob. This isn't a situation due to what he's targeting. It's not a situation where we can move this offshore a certain amount of footage.
And I think along the eastern shore you have a mixture of the shallow water pounds and the deeper water pounds, but by no means are the deep water pounds the way they were back 20 and 30 years ago, but they are at depth. So some of the harvesters will set shallow nets for flounder too. Concerning the horseshoe crab comment, you know, I think that recently we have a prohibition 1,000 feet in either direction, either landward or shoreward, for horseshoe crabs being harvested from May 1 through June 7th. And I think Mr. Bender's comment may have been correct about June ending the pound net quota, but that may change because of the way that now is being interpreted, that some of these nets are within that 1,000 feet. And so, you know, that's the reason that it may not end in June as well. So there are other reasons for the nets being there other than horseshoe crabs as well.
Other discussion?
I would move for Rob's third option, which was to deny this permit but to allow Mr. Bender to apply for a new location if he so desires.
Second.
First by Mr. Neal, second by Mr. Zedrin. Further discussion? I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. The motion passes unanimously. With that, I'd like to take a 10-minute recess. It's been a long day for the commission. I think we need a moment to recharge our batteries.
Legs.
Reconvene in 10 minutes.